welcome to a brand new episode of Sequel Rights, the podcast where we take a look at the franchises that make you go, they made how many of those? And we give each and every sequel fair trial. My name is Justin Camps, and I'm here with
Elizabeth Helley
and
Tyler Hymanson.
Oh, and we finally made it to the Modern Apes trilogy.
Quadrilogy.
It's coming up. But still, just a trilogy for now, just a trilogy. Till the other one releases. But here we are, Planet of the Apes. We're talking about Rise of the Planet of the Apes from 2011. Rise. And this is going to be a fun one. I'm excited to finally get to these modern movies after being in the olden times for so long.
This modern 13-year-old movie.
Yeah, so modern. Anyways, we have an exciting episode for you guys. Not only do we have our discussion of Rise of the Planet of the Apes, but we have a special interview at the end of the episode with actor Richard Ridings, who starred in Rise of the Planet of the Apes as Buck the Gorilla. He's also been in a million other things, including voicing Daddy Pig for Peppa Pig.
Yes.
For amazing. 20 years.
It's been a hot minute since we talked to someone who was literally in the movie.
So that's really
exciting.
We always have these great, you know, like guests in the film community and podcast community, and it's fun to talk to people who actually worked on the film. So, yeah, tune in at the end of the episode for that, along with our patented AI-created song. It's not patented. Yes. We did it first here.
It's not even that.
That's not true. But anyways, those are exciting things for you guys at the end of the episode. But before we get too far into things here, Eliz, where can people reach out to us?
Email us at sequelrights@gmail.com or find us on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook at Sequel Rights. And also, you can listen to all of the episodes on YouTube. And the new format for those channels is youtube.com/@sequelrights.
Oh,
That's an
important detail there. Rate and review wherever you're listening. Go onto YouTube. Put those things on these episodes. I think we want to find out why you think Caesar, all the other movies, put in so much backstory. There was tasteful drawings of why Ricardo Montalban taught them how to ride a horse.
Tasteful.
And this, we get no explanation for this Caesar. He can just ride this horse. And it's a controversy.
It was when the police were like, bring out the mounted unit. I was like, don't bring out the mounted unit.
They clearly know how to ride horses.
Haven't you seen the drawing?
These people haven't watched the other movies. Yeah.
Yeah.
Other thing. Oh, yeah. Go for it.
So anyway, yeah. Rate, review, and leave. Like, get that flame war happening in the comments.
One other thing I was going to just mention quick about YouTube is hopefully we can get the video of Richard Ridings' interview up for you as well, because he actually does some great recreations of faces and kind of like the facial movements he did for Buck. So that'll be a fun component to see that you can only see on the video.
That's very cool.
Yeah, he was, you know, illustrating where all the dots go and all the different muscles he used to make the emotions. So it's a cool watch.
Yeah, it's very cool. So thank you again to Richard for being on this episode.
Yeah.
All right, you guys, let's get into it. 2011's Rise of the Planet of the Apes, featuring James Franco.
We're talking about huge potential for millions of people.
Our therapy enables the brain to repair itself.
We call it the cure.
I want you to start testing in chimps ASAP.
We test one subject. I want to make sure it's stable.
I designed the 112 for repair, but Caesar's gone way beyond that.
You mean increased intelligence?
The skills that far exceed that of a human counterpart.
This is wrong, Will.
It works.
And what about Caesar? Where does he fit in?
That chimp's company property.
He hasn't spent any time with other chimps.
They're not people, you know.
You're trying to control things that are not meant to be controlled.
I just love that. I was like, I gotta get to that alarm part because I just love that sound.
Chimp.
No, Tyler, these aren't like other chimps, okay?
Yeah, it's true.
Clearly. Some of them sometimes talk. Okay. Oh, boy. All right. It's 2011.
It is.
Rise of the Planet of the Apes. Have you either had either of you guys seen this movie before now?
I saw it in the theater.
Ooh. Same.
I believe I watched it like on a streaming service in the middle of the night the day before I was supposed to go with you to see the third movie in the theaters.
Nice. That's good. That's good.
So all I didn't remember much of it. And I had definitely, certainly never seen all of the original run before seeing it. And so it was delightful to see all the little like Easter eggs and references and, you know, how things were the same or different, or it was very fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's fun to revisit. This is one that like, I think of this new trilogy, I've seen all of them at least multiple times, but like closer to their release dates. I haven't watched them in a while here, but, when they came out, I was like, I think I saw them maybe twice in theaters, or I was like getting other people like, oh, you got to watch this. It's really good. Or my parents or whatever. Yeah, this one's great. And it is fun to have the full backstory now and revisit them. I agree. So this film, it stars James Franco, Andy Serkis.
Film stars Andy Serkis.
Andy Serkis. That's, yeah. That's,
James Franco, bad person, but pretty good actor in this movie, yeah, I hate to say.
Yeah, like, pretty good.
But he had more chemistry with Andy Serkis, Caesar, than he did with Frida Pinto, by far.
True. Yeah.
She got nothing to do here.
We got Tom Felton. We got Brian Cox. We got John Lithgow. What a cast.
What a
Tom Felton not caring at all about being typecast and just playing a straight-up psycho.
I watching this, I was like,
it's a madhouse.
There's another universe where Tom Felton is a Roy son.
Oh, my God. Yeah. You know, he was probably up for it.
He probably was.
Kieran. He would have done great. I love Kieran, but yeah, I'm sure Tom Felton would have been amazing, too.
You guys like James Franco in this movie?
I did. I mean, I don't know. I thought it was like he really loved that ape and he loved his dad too. I don't know how much he loved Frida Pinto.
As far as humans in these types of movies, he is, if we're talking about like titular character and just the human that has to be there, he is below Bumblebee and potentially above some Benjis.
You guys tell me you like genius scientist James Franco?
I mean, I just watched almost all of Grey's Anatomy, and they are constantly being like, F the rules. I'm going to cure Alzheimer's and Parkinson's and not tell anybody. I'm going to use AIDS to cure this other kid or something and stuff like that. And so all of it was completely believable to me. I was like, yeah, this is how it's all going to go down.
I believe him. As like more than I believe genius inventor Mark Wahlberg.
Was he even an inventor? Oh, in Transformers.
Yeah.
I was thinking about last week. I was like, he was an inventor?
That's true. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I definitely believe that. Yeah. That he was biochemist. Like,
every time he said stuff like this, it made me want to pass away. But, you know, listen to this.
At age 3, Caesar continues to show cognitive skills that far exceed that of a human counterpart.
I mean, it sounds like someone
was
like...
It's a little bit weird.
Here, James. I know you haven't seen this, but just read it right off the
I don't know about the voiceover, but I think the
voiceover
scenes,
is so terrible.
The scenes with Caesar, I liked.
It sounds like the words are struggling to get out of his mouth.
Yeah, listen.
At age 3, Caesar continues to show cognitive skills that far exceed that of a human counterpart.
That's rough.
It sounds like he said it like, I just got off my surfboard.
Or he has food in his mouth or something. Yeah.
It's like Bill and Ted's final project, but like done unironically.
Yeah.
I was watching that and I was just thinking like, it's like, at 24 months, Caesar decided that he liked jeans. At age 2, he graduated to Wranglers. And by age 3, he was wearing custom fit Levi's. There's that like montage of him like slowly wearing clothes.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. I think I'm just joking about James Franco. I think he's fine in this, but like, the voiceover was a little grating for me because it's just like, it sounds like it was recorded.
Yeah. I don't
as
think
an
it was
afterthought.
The best way to deliver that information. No.
Some of it almost feels like, did they just decide to do this voiceover thing later after he was already like finished with the character.
It might have been like they could have had more scenes where he's explaining it to Freda Pinto or the other guy, the guy from the lab or something, being like, oh my God, this is what happened, or you know, something like that. And then maybe they were just like, eh, it's not working, put in a voiceover, we need to, you know, cut it for time. But yeah. I mean, I don't know, like how often when he was acting with Caesar, I mean, it was probably very much not often with Andy Serkis. Like, he was probably acting with nothing most of the time. Maybe Andy Serkis once in a while, maybe another guy.
Yeah, there's a lot of the stuff like where Andy Serkis is, you know, in the special features, there's a lot. It's really cool to see actually like Andy Serkis performing just in the mocap suit right. So there's tons of those special features. And there's a lot of the scenes like at the house before he goes to the animal control shelter that is like James Franco like walking with him. And
yeah.
And there's a bunch of deleted scenes.
Well, I mean, I don't have any scientific skills, but like if I did and I had the capability to do something that might have a chance to cure my parent, like I probably would do it. Let's be real. Yeah. Like, you know. Especially because he didn't know, he never really got to know about the viral component or the disease component, you know, within his knowledge. But
yeah,
that was David Oyelowo's fault.
I mean, he does kind of say that, like, it's a virus. We don't know what it's going
to
do.
Right, right. But he wanted it to be very contained and slow. And then David Oyelowo was like, no, I'm an evil tech billionaire.
Let's put it in all the
eggs. No, yeah. I'm going to be in a Cloverfield movie.
Mr. Scientist. Yeah.
The space one. No one remembers. Yeah. So I feel like the actions he takes throughout the movie make sense, since, you know, John Lithgow is playing amazing sad dad character.
Right.
Sad dad.
Who's and like, I can't believe that was that many years ago, but like he's still acting and stuff now and he's perfectly fine. It's not like he's Anthony Hopkins or he's not the father. He's just like, oh, I have Alzheimer's already. Oh, now I do again and I'm dead, you know?
Yeah. I love that, I guess obviously this would have been, you know, spoiled by the trailers at the time, but the film kind of starts off in such a way where you're thinking like, oh, maybe this is the Planet of the Apes already. Yeah. Mm. But we just kind of, you know, get to see the what's happening to the chimpanzees getting captured in their homeland and brought back for these scientist experiments. And I love that, you know, you're talking about the Easter eggs. Mm-hmm. There's all sorts of Easter eggs throughout the film.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like they're not done super heavy-handedly.
We wouldn't have even known if
they're not like super pointed at. Like,
I feel like that the most obvious is the damn dirty ape thing.
But it makes sense in context. Well, and not it makes like sense in
context, and it's answered so quickly by it's like the payoff of Caesar speaking in this movie is so dramatic that it really like it. I have a slight problem with it pairing it with like, oh, like he said the thing, but it, like it immediately shuts it down in a way that I think is really powerful and kind of cool.
And also it's like, okay, think back to just how it was referenced in the last movie we watched.
Yeah.
So
and it was just like a throwaway, like, get your hands off me, you damn human. Like, and it was like,
I die now.
No impact. Yeah. Absolutely nothing. And this is like in the ultimate like crescendo moment of the movie.
I liked it. And then he also does the It's a Madhouse, but that's in jest, like, because he's fucking with the apes, like, which is, well, not literally, figuratively, but he's messing with them so he says the Madhouse line there, which is like, oh well, he's Draco Malfoy, he's insane. So, you know,
we call it enrichment here. That's so funny.
At the Waystar Royco
primate shelter.
I did like kind of forget that Brian Cox was in this movie. Yeah.
I had no idea. And this is like, literally, I was watching this like one day after Brian Cox made headlines for saying that Joaquin Phoenix sucked in Napoleon and that he could have done a better job himself. Like, Brian Cox is amazing. He just says the most insane shit, but then also is like McDonald's.
Yes.
I was a little bit like, why is he even talking about that?
Right? He's just who asked him? You know what I saw recently? Napoleon. And he sucked. You know, I would have been better.
It's
like, did the reporter somehow get a hot tip that like, hey, I heard Brian Cox didn't like Napoleon. You can try to get him to talk about it.
Anyways, sorry, I digress.
I was a little bit like, yeah, I forgot who's in this movie, and it kind of makes sense because he doesn't even, like, I was a little bit like, why is he in this movie? I don't know. He doesn't do much.
My favorite part about his performance in this movie is that he leaves his son you know, who's there drinking with some friends at the ape enclosure, and he's like, I'm gonna go home and like whatever, and then like his kid's dead all night long,
so dead,
and like everybody's there, and he's just driving up the next day, like doo doo doo, another day at the ape enclosure.
We never really get to see him react to what has happened.
They show him watching the security footage, and that would be a horrible way to be like, yeah. God damn it, my son is a fucking idiot.
He kind of did not like his son. Yeah. I mean, were they both his kids? Was the other guy's son?
I don't know.
Were they brothers? I don't know.
It's hard to tell.
Yeah, whatever.
It seemed like maybe.
But I guess their names are references to the other non-Taylor astronauts from the first movie. But that's something you would never freaking know.
Yeah. There's also like the orangutan's name is Maurice.
Yeah. Probably Cornelia. Maurice
Evans, yeah.
We have a Cornelia.
Cornelia.
Cornelia. We've got, I'm like, let's just talk through what other reference. Caesar's shown like playing with a, Statue of Liberty.
Yes, that was funny. Like a 3D puzzle.
Yeah, like a 3D puzzle thing.
There's a mission to Mars.
Yeah, yes.
That goes missing.
It's Icarus launched to Mars, and then like a few scenes later, it's like lost in space.
Danger, Will Robinson.
So I'm half expecting or hoping or I don't know.
Oh my god!
Like, at the end of the new movie, something will happen. Who knows?
Oh my god!
I don't know.
2070.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see.
Who's it gonna be?
But I did think
Charlton Heston.
Charlton Heston.
I.
The ghost.
Grand Admiral.
Oh, no. The kind of, like, even though it's not really an Easter egg, the vibe of, like, toward the end when the apes are taking over, like, San Francisco, kind of, I was like, this is sort of, like, where, like, the vibe of conquest or where it almost could have gone had they had many, many more dollars.
Yes.
You know, like, it's great seeing, like, oh, the apes are effing with, like, modern society. They're effing up the cable car. They're, you know, they're in the stores. They're running through an office building, you know, all that good stuff.
Yeah, so.
They don't care about plate glass windows. They'll jump out of them just to look cool.
There was an interview with Rupert Wyatt in 2009 where he literally said, like, we've incorporated elements from conquest of the Planet of the Apes in terms of how the apes begin to revolt. But this is primarily a prequel to the 1968 film.
Okay.
But that's interesting that they kind of
had
that in mind.
Yeah, it felt like that, and I was excited to see it too. Yep. So, and yeah, we already talked about like when they were like, we're bringing out the horses. Like, don't bring out the horses.
Don't bring out the horses.
They're great at that. They're really, really great at riding those dang horses.
And obviously, the greatest Easter egg and callback is that Maurice is from the circus.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, she's from the circus.
Circus.
Circus. Yep. Was it Armando Sarkis?
Wait, so what is that kind of ape called?
The orangutan?
That's orangutan? Yeah. But then there's also like regular orangutans in this movie. Like once they start bringing out everybody. Like what? That's not the same as like the Dr. Zaius orangutans, right?
I think it is.
Like, really? With the big things on the face? Okay.
Because they had those orangutans like the sex apes in the last movie.
Yeah, that's true.
It was an orangutan with the big face like that too. Hmm. I think they look the same.
Just different variations.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that they were, in the original movies, they were going, the costume based off King Louis.
Right. Well, and once they start going, I was kind of like, oh my gosh, they're like, there's only one gorilla and one orangutan. Like, this is going to be a like really unbalanced society. But then they go to the lab.
They go to the zoo.
And they go to the zoo. And which I'm also kind of like, those apes, the dumb ones, probably had a hard time keeping up with everybody as they're like running off into the woods.
Also, think about this, America. Think about
hey, like, they're the ones that grabbed all the spears right away.
How many apes do you think are in your town right now?
It's true. Boy. And should they band that's together?
Yeah, it should be, you never know.
So it says it is a Bornean orangutan. So, you know, there might be, I think there's different species.
Oh, okay.
You know, maybe one of them was a different type. I don't know. They all kind of have the big face. Oh, it's the females that have like kind of a smaller face.
Okay.
So there you go.
Got it.
Dr. Zaius was a female.
You know, now I think about it, there was no female orangutans or gorillas ever in the past movies.
True.
So.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. But anyway, we have like jumped all over
the place. We've jumped all over the place. Let's get back to this movie having the exact same plot as Deep Blue Sea. where Alzheimer's needs to be cured, and the only way that we can do it is testing animals. Now, James Franco has decided to be a little bit safer and not have to have his experiments take place on a decommissioned submarine base in the middle of the ocean. Which I think is good on him. Yeah. I think that, you know, his California delivery aside, that shows proves he's a good scientist.
He's in a normal lab.
Yeah.
And there's a chimp handler.
Yeah.
In a fancy office building with a see-through conference room. Yeah. One thing we didn't mention is that Caesar's mother's name is Bright Eyes.
That's right. Yes.
Because taking in this virus compound makes you have little green flux in your eyes, which I guess is how we'll continue to distinguish between the smart apes and the dumb apes as we go forward.
Which I did really enjoy in that sequence. There's a nice little, there's a lot of physicality, and I think that's the thing that as we get into this trilogy and quadrilogy of, it's kind of the pinnacle of big time serious Hollywood visual effects. I think that even this movie is 13 years old. There are parts of it that don't quite hold up, but there's parts of it that still feel very high end visual effects.
Nominated for an Academy Award this
indeed
film for visual effects.
And I think that, you know, there are things in Marvel movies that today that look worse than sequences of this movie, and the physicality and the respect to the motion capture and everything else are fantastic. And in the scene where, you know, Caesar has released the gas to cure Alzheimer's in the ape pen, and they're all leaving, and he's kind of just checking all of their eyes as they come out to sure that they've been exposed. And it does this nice, like, he turns to camera, and it's like a close-up, and you see his, like, it gives the scene context. It's kind of like, remember, dummies, it's about the eyes. But but it is a really cool way to really lean on those visual effects and make sure that they're, like, if you're not fully confident that shot's going to work, it's a really ballsy shot to put in the movie.
Well, and they finally, like, at this point in time, have the eyes right. It's not a Polar Express, you know, situation. Like, and if you do have that, nothing in this movie works.
Yeah, exactly.
There's no way. Exactly. Like, they had to get it right, finally.
Yeah, it's really impressive.
Yeah, there's a lot of, like, close-up shots, particularly, like, when they do the supplication gesture where you see the hands and you see the hands touch. I'm like, those look like they just took people's wearing, like, gloves or, like, real hands.
Real ape hands.
My bad. You're fired.
I know.
I'm kidding.
Chimp on a blue. I think that the emotional core at this movie, I was making fun of the Deep Blue Sea part of it, but, like, John Lithgow and, you know, that story and trying to push science and improve humanity is a very interesting foil for the unraveling of us all. And I think that emotional core works. I think that the world here is undone by best intentions. And I think that is always the case.
As funny as it would have been to have the dog and cat plague, this makes it much more, you know, effective and impactful to us human people watching it. As much as we would have missed the dog.
But
and
I like
cats.
That they, I like that they take the same idea that it was ultimately a plague of some kind.
Yeah.
That, like, allowed the apes to come.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, the whole, like, credits sequence, you know, is crazy and hits different, you know.
It's like I know, really. Yeah, I always thought, like, man, the balls to, like, kill off the human race in a post-credit scene,
yeah,
or like a during the credits,
because that's
sequence.
Not about that, so just go ahead and do it. But I don't know, I mean, it is a, and I'm sure we'll get more and more sci-fi that is about this, but it's one of those things where it's like, yeah, maybe curing Alzheimer's will be the thing to kill us all, because maybe we're not supposed to cure it because we're supposed to die, like, as horrible as that is. I'm not saying I don't want to cure it, but
right,
it would make sense that, like, maybe something that we're technically not, like, supposed to be doing is what's gonna kill all of us.
Yeah.
But
so spoke the lawgiver.
Yeah. Ape shall not kill ape. But yeah, so Caesar, you know, he's born with the virus already in him. So he's already way ahead. And
he's
then later, and then he lives with humans his whole life. You can't overstate the nature nurture here. He gets nurtured as a
orders
son,
of magnitude over his human.
Although, like, the way that they recognize that he's already super smart is, like, day one, he, like, can drink out of a baby bottle without thinking about it, and they're like, oh, fuck. fuck.
Yeah.
This chimp's smart as fuck.
Right. And like, but then later when he releases the gas, he gets more dosed.
More
like,
smart.
Probably that's more true than any of the other people that were there, because he's in there as he's opening all the cans. So that's why he eventually
This is in the Ape spinoff universe. This is their version of Limitless. take that. Just give me that pill.
Yeah.
I want that pill.
The other character that I think is hilarious, and it's just funny, I think it's the same guy the entire time. Like the neighbor.
It's one guy.
The neighbor is just gets fucked with the entire movie, and then he's the guy who ends up killing everybody.
Yeah. Well, okay, so first of all, it's like, you kind of feel bad for him, because you're like, okay, your neighbor probably shouldn't have a wild ape. Yeah. It sucks that you have a neighbor with Alzheimer's that crashed your car. Yeah. But, you know, but also, you're a dick. And like, yeah. You know, yes. Like, leave that old man alone.
This guy can't shut the fuck up about the fact that he's a pilot.
Right.
He tells everybody, mm-hmm. I'm a pilot. I got to get to the airport so I can infect the world.
Yeah. It's
you can't crash my car. I'm a pilot.
It's when he got coughed on by, what's his name? Franklin or whatever. Yeah. I was kind of like, he had it coming, you know? Yeah. But then I was like, oh, wait. Yeah, he's a pilot. Ugh.
It's just a little funny that it was like the same guy just getting like totally fucked with the entire movie. It could have just been, it could have been like anybody who randomly happened to be a pilot.
That those NorCal property values. You can't afford to move. You know, he's like, my next door neighbor has a freaking chip and an old man with Alzheimer's. I can't even afford to move.
He just wanted to play with the bike, okay? Jesus. Leave him alone. Yeah. I
do like, fun. Though, that this movie, like, even though it has a lot of references to the old kind of, like, lore, it also, like, creates its own new things, like the window. And then, like, we start seeing that symbol everywhere that he's just putting it there for no reason. And I'm sure the apes generations later are still going to be doing it and not even know why.
But it reminded me of like the Fireflies in Last of Us, where it's like, you see like a street sign that now has the window logo on it and everything.
It's, which is really like, it was a heartbreaking scene to have him draw it. It's a heartbreaking scene when he erases it. And like the emotions, I think a thing why this movie felt special at the time, and I think that there's still lessons to be taken away from it, is that it required such silence for the action set pieces and things like that, and just focusing on the physicality. Mm-hmm. And I think we've seen that with a lot of the action movies that's come out, you know, John Wick's a good example of that, but like focusing on like these big effect shots that have to feel grounded and human and just not for the pure spectacle of it. It's a really interesting way to have to compose action. And I feel like that the third act of this movie is so wildly satisfying in terms of the ape action. And I think it just required, you know, you're not relying on quips. You're not like, you know, any movie now has, you know, 5,000 beats.
It's got the Marvel humor into it.
Yes. And like, this is just pure visually dynamic and interesting and compelling. And I think that there's a lot to learn about how some of these set pieces are conceived.
Yeah. I think it's like kudos to the studio for actually letting them take these risks for all these like dialogue-less scenes.
Yes.
And, you know, I read that was one of the complications they were dealing with, like with Patrick Doyle working on the score, that like his score really had to like try to carry these scenes that like sell the emotion when there's no dialogue and it's all just Andy Serkis's performance or the other ape characters' performances. And I just, I think that's really impressive. Like you see plenty of movies that come out where it's like, they could have just given more time to this story.
Yep.
Let people sit with it and like experience the emotion instead of like cutting it to shreds or abbreviating things. Like this one really gives a lot to work with. And it's like, you know, knowing that we have these other sequels too, it's insane to watch and see like how many things they allowed to just be like loose threads and potential ideas and like really building a groundwork for movies that they didn't necessarily know were happening, but they also didn't feel like they were leaving a groundwork in like a gimmicky way.
No.
Like there's not a crazy cliffhanger at the end. Like, sure, we see this credit scene of the human race.
But if it just ended there, it would just go straight into the original series.
Exactly.
And that would be fine.
That would be it.
Well, and I do get though, why the people that we've talked to that are hardcore fans of the original series are kind of like, those movies are fine, but they're not Planet of the Apes, which you know, of course, obviously they are, you know, legally, but right. I can get why they say that though, because it really does not have kind of that, like, it is very much because we have the technology now about the action and the spectacle and the technology. Whereas those older movies were a lot about like, okay, we're going to have a whole courtroom scene about personhood, you know, yeah. like, and now we're going to talk about animal yeah. testing and that, which this has plenty of animals being tested, but I don't think it really says anything about animal testing, if that makes sense.
I think right. it's a different sci-fi vehicle, right? Like there's different yeah. ideas that can be generated and they're less neck up, like, hey, let's think about this type yeah. of things. And I think that it does kind of probe at some unease that's out there. But I do think that you're right. It's like it's not that clear cut Twilight Zone morality sci-fi cipher that,
yeah.
that was we were capable of in the 60s and 70s. But I do think that these movies kind of hint towards some of that stuff.
Yeah, maybe it'll get into it more, too. Yeah. But it also kind of made me, like, from what I remember... Maybe not that much, but yeah. I don't know if it really does become that, talking, you know, we could sit and talk about like the morals and everything, but like, I think it would go towards like, you've created this great universe. And it's kind of like the same thing that people always say about Star Wars, where they're like, why can't I have a rom-com in Star Wars? Why right. can't I have a horror movie in Star Wars?
Why can't I have Planet of the Apes Limitless spinoff?
Yeah. Right? Like, why can't I have, you know, Caesar? Marriage Story, but it takes yeah. place in Star Wars, or, you know, this is like, people are always saying that, but I think it's like the same thing with the apes where it's like, this is the action. And most of these are going to be about the wars and the battles and, you know,
yeah.
what happens from then on and how the apes, you know, rise. But it would be interesting if it was like, okay, well now we're gonna like we're all gonna argue about what to do about the humans and we're yeah. just gonna yeah. sit in a room and argue about it, you know, like
I think it's super fascinating because you could probably use this film and maybe this trilogy as like a case study of like how to bring an old franchise into like a modern audience and like really yeah. make people connect to it. Cause I guarantee that there's like people that fucking love these new films that would like watch the old ones and be like, no, like I get that this came first, but like this yeah. isn't Planet of the Apes for me.
Yeah. Or it could be interesting too, to like talk about the sort of morality or ethics of Caesar dosing everybody,
yeah,
like, and himself,
yeah,
because I mean, what I'm guessing is they're gonna say, well, that was it, there's no more of this, and all the humans are dead, so we're not making more. I don't know, I could be wrong, but like, it'd be nuts if he like got addicted and kept yeah. sneaking back in and yeah. getting more to like dose himself to yeah. be smarter and that's smarter.
Not, yeah, they don't really make that clear, I guess. And it seems like he's doing it to actually help.
Yeah.
Sure.
But the morality of bestowing consciousness yeah. on things right. is, that's true. Is an maybe interesting dilemma. Maybe some of
those apes were like, I don't want to be smart. I was way happier yeah. when I was just, you know.
Well, you see that when there's that great scene like when they're all waking up the next day and they're like, you see them all like contemplating their existence like, the fuck? Like, I'm in a cage? Like,
yeah.
yeah.
I kind of love that scene because he does it like while they're asleep. And so right. they all wake up suddenly like aware of life and who they are and like what's going on.
I'd probably be really pissed if that happened to me. I already feel like I'm thinking about too many things, you know? Yeah. Like if I woke up and suddenly had like twice the intelligence that I have now, yeah, I'd be miserable.
You had like yeah. interdimensional knowledge yeah. and stuff. You were like,
yeah. I mean, like, I need to get real dumb real fast. Yeah.
yeah. I didn't want to know this.
Whiskey yeah. stat. I do think that it'll be interesting to talk about this as it goes along. I think that the new movies offer it's more of a foil on the humanity side of it because it's still telling that story. But I think that it is still a variation on the theme of how we backslide to our own self-destruction, right? Where it's like, this movie is about best intentions. James Franco is trying to do all the right things mm-hmm. and may have murdered the human race in the process. And I think that, you know, there's the atom bomb's a good metaphor for that. And I think that you'll see the antagonist in the movies to come, all think that they're also doing the right thing and it becomes variations on that. You know, what these movies are at their core is a warning of, you know, this is everything that we have is fragile. And I think that it's an interesting continuation of that exploration, but I do think that it's less explicit and more look, there was less popcorny for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. An interesting question that I was kind of thinking of is, do you like, because it did work for me, the end when Caesar kind of like forgives James Franco and says bye to him or whatever, you know, but like, do you think that he would have forgave him even if he hadn't been dosed to an even higher level of intellect
and possibly
EQ and IQ? Like, I mean, he was just, maybe he would have forgave him anyways. He was just so angry that first time that he couldn't. He would have got there emotionally even without the additional intellect.
He got that empathy upgrade.
Or, was he only able to do that because he had
These are the questions.
Because he had leveled up.
I think he still would have forgiven him because you see that scene like where he originally rejects like going home with him.
Yeah.
He wants to go home.
Yeah, you see him facing the wall and like you see the pain on his face. Like he's doing this because he knows, I think in that moment, he knows he needs to stay and help figure what's going on.
He can't leave them, but like the only thing he wants to do is go home.
But you can see in his eyes in that performance that like it's killing him to say no. So I think like he still, whether or not he got this like mega upgrade in brain, it's unclear honestly if he gets further smart from that.
Well, he does even talk after that.
But I guess it's unclear if it's like, to me it's unclear if that's directly related to
it was
or it could just be him growing and
he was with humans a long time, you know. It's like
I guess
he also was smarter to begin with, so but I think the fact that he was totally raised by James Franco and like with him for his entire life,
I hope he would have.
I think he would have forgiven him.
It was an emotional moment. Unless but then he saw James Franco's gonna F off and die from the virus.
And he was trying to prevent deaths. Like he was not allowing him to kill outright except for the dramatic helicopter drop scene, which is fantastic.
Yeah.
And that wasn't even him.
Yes. No. He was like, I'm not going to do this. But
there's actually a deleted scene where it is him. Who's like, bye.
But regardless, that was David Yellowo, and he was evil, and everybody knew he was evil. So, which technically, I don't really know how Caesar knew, but he knew.
Yeah.
It is funny that he was the guy who got to go along in the helicopter and like be like, kill those apes, right? That's the one. Get him.
It is interesting because it's Buck, the gorilla, that does it, but it's Koba that initially lashes out at David Yellowo, right? Because he's the one that got like dosed by him.
Yeah, he was getting like extra tortured, I think, in the lab. And he was like, Jacobs.
Oh, yeah, that was so crazy.
I do love the hubris of, you know, this whole time James Franco is trying to rush across the Golden Gate Bridge. This is where this big set piece is happening.
Right.
And he's like, oh, my God, the cops are just going to just completely murder them all. And they strategize to go up and over and around. And their ability to overwhelm these forces, even fully militarized police, is believable and, like, really cool. And it is one of those things where it's like, yep, if they stop them on that bridge, maybe the world doesn't end. But they didn't, and we're happy about it, kind of, as an audience.
I mean, should we be ape-proofing the Golden Gate Bridge now?
Yeah.
On the bottom?
Yeah. Again, think about how many apes are in your town.
Yeah, they showed us what could happen. Now we've been warned.
Yeah, we're going to feel real dumb if the apes make it out underneath the Golden Gate Bridge when it comes. I mean,
everyone's going to be like, this happened in Rise of the Planet of the Apes.
If it gets that far, we deserve to go.
We did it.
Go.
Yeah.
I agree.
But James Franco must have ran like 4 miles or something, right? Isn't the bridge like 2 miles, right? And then however long it takes to get to the Muir Woods.
I guess it was unclear like where his car got stopped on the bridge.
He ran for a long time. And then to get all the way to the national park or the state park, whatever it is.
But. And then who knows how far into the woods he was.
Yeah. Right.
Up that trail. There's a, speaking a little bit of Koba, there's a deleted ending with him as well where they show him in the woods picking up a shotgun.
Oh.
And he kind of like picks it up and is figuring it out. And then he turns it like at the camera and it shoots
it. Yeah. That's kind of dope.
Which is cool, but it's a little goofy. But
I do like that they let some of these apes look kind of scary and kind of messed up and but also natural. And
well, it's interesting. Yeah. Well, you'll see like, yeah, well, I don't know if I want to spoil
it. Okay, don't spoil it. Let me talk about the child stars.
Yes, let's do it.
I was very angry doing this research because a lot of these people I could not find, right? So we talked about the pilot. His name is Mr. Hunsicker, right? and he has a son and a daughter. His daughter is named Alice Hunsaker, not to be confused with our friend Alyssa Hunsaker. I was like, which is pretty funny. Yeah. But she was played in the young version by Madison Bell and then as a teen by McKenna Joy. But I could not find either of those people. Because I think the farther we go in time, the more the parents and the child stars are like, I'm going to take some dumb stage name so I can have a private life later. Right.
Smart.
And you won't be able to child star check in.
They're trying to learn from the previous child stars.
Yeah, I guess so. So, yeah, I'm sure McKenna Joy is her first middle name and her last name is, you know, whatever. Yeah, they are. They are evolving. The child stars are evolving. They got dosed. Not like that. Okay. And then Todd, the boy, was actually played by two brothers. So that's, I guess, nice. Joey is the younger, and then the older brother played the teen version of him, Sean Connor Roche and Joey Roche. But I did find a lot of other people. Okay. So Muir Woods, family boy.
Okay.
Which I don't know if you remember the scene. Yeah. He has that line, and then the dog freaks out, and yeah. So this whole movie mostly is Vancouver for San Francisco. So we get the Vancouver acting troupe community involved here. But this boy named Jack Curris is Muir Woods' family boy. And crazily, like everything that I found about him. So at some point, may have been after filming, but before this movie came out, or maybe after the movie came out, I'm not quite sure. But his father, he has a brother and a sister younger than him. His father was killed in a freak crane accident. Entire construction equipment vehicle like fell on him and he passed away. And there was like a huge crowdfunding campaign and like legislation for like worker safety in Canada and like all of these things. And it was really crazy. And then his mom became like an advocate for, you know, people grieving their spouses. And he played like middle school football and stuff like that, but I'm not really sure what he's up to now. But I found an article that his mom wrote just this year in the spring saying that he was now graduating from an aviation business program and training to become a pilot, like an airline pilot.
Oh, no. So, that's pilots end the world.
Dun, dun, dun. Oh, right. Yeah. Spread disease. I mean,
that's not the Hunsakers though. This is Muir Woods' family boy. So anyways, their family is doing fine now, but that's so crazy. Like you're like, oh, I was in a movie and then like this horrible tragedy and the movie comes out, you're like, I don't care about that anymore.
Yeah.
Ugh, rough. Newspaper boy number one.
Newspaper
boy.
Back of the truck.
Yeah.
Peter
from the trailer movie.
Bundick. Yeah. He plays Carl Tapper in 15 episodes of The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina. I don't know if that makes sense to you.
Yeah.
And then newspaper boy number two, Dylan Norrie, is working on his BFA in acting, dual degree with management masters from the University of British Columbia.
Oh, nice.
Child in car. Matteo Mazziotti streams his Fortnite games on YouTube. Has worked in a variety of restaurants.
I'm gonna go comment on him.
Yeah.
And then,
yo, are you boy in car from Rise of the Planet of the Apes?
Scared girl in stairwell. Not clear to me if she was actually a child when this movie happened, but and I don't even remember that scene. But scared girl in stairwell, Lauren Watson, also got a role in the Vancouver world in a movie called This Means War. I don't know if you remember this movie, but it has famous people in it.
I do not remember.
But she moved back to Australia now, and she's like directing and writing her own shorts. But around the time of 50 Shades, somehow she got involved in this kind of internet campaign where the fans, like the readers of the books, decided that she should be the unknown actress who should be cast as Anastasia Steele, because they were hoping that it would be like an unknown, not a like, you know, famous actress, which I guess they kind of did because Dakota Johnson wasn't that known at the time, but they wanted it to be like someone who had literally only been, you know, scared girl in stairwell. And so there's like Facebook groups and articles about how like the fan community has anointed this girl, like the girl who should be Anastasia Steele. And then of course, like that did not happen. But you know, she has a kid, she moved back to Australia, she's making her shorts, good for her. That's it for the Child Stars.
Wow.
Very good.
Caesar, what did you think of the Child Stars check-in this week? Did you like it?
No!
It's not my fault.
I didn't think he was going to say that. What?
They're evolving.
I was just asking him a question to involve him. I'm sorry, Eliz.
Wow.
No, it was
good. Cry now.
I was just trying to think of a way to play that.
Flimsy premises.
No!
It is great. Such a big moment when he says
it's fantastic.
Yeah. Anytime someone's like, hey, you want to like stop playing video games for a second and help me out?
No!
Should have been Spike's first word in Land Before Time. He should have said no also.
True.
Would have been great.
So is there anything else we want to discuss about?
Littlefoot would have been like, wait, we got to go on another journey. Spike's just like, no.
No.
Sorry.
It's a madhouse. Is there anything else that we want? Oh, go.
Take your stinking bar off me, you damn 38.
Also, I have this one.
Most cost-effective way to put those apes down.
I can't do that. You're the chimp handler. Handle it.
You're the chimp handler.
You're the chimp handler.
Handle it.
Is this before or after Selma?
That's before.
It's got to be before.
What was he famous for? How did he get this role? Like...
just for being a good actor.
I guess, yeah. I was just so surprised to see him because I was like, I thought it was too early for a yellow woe. But
that's a good question. I don't know. I was trying to look it up here quick, but my internet is suddenly...
Oh, no worries.
Betraying me.
He's a perfectly good mustache-twirling tech executive.
Indeed.
Dying in a tragic.
Selma was 2014, so there you go.
Oh, okay.
So 3 years after this.
Yeah, I don't know. He was also, this same year, he was in... The Help, and then Lincoln after that in 2012.
Okay. Yeah. Cool. But yeah, that's all I have.
That is all I have as well. It's one of those movies where it's just like...
It's great.
It's good.
It's just so good. And especially good. If once you have the background, it becomes so exciting.
Yeah, it is the gold standard for like how you bring one of these franchises back, mm-hmm. and I think that it is not respected as that in the slightest.
Yeah.
And I think that... Part of that respect is how much it's been able to fly under the radar and its ability to do that.
Mm-hmm. Rating system.
How many canisters of the limitless gas would you give?
ALZ-113.
ALZ-113.
Bradley first.
Bradley Cooper is going to get real smart.
Me? Okay, I'm going to give it 8 canisters. Yeah. And that's honestly only because I know the other movies are coming and I think I like some of those better.
Yep.
But I think this is still a really good... obviously this kicked off the whole thing. It did really well. We didn't talk about that, but
yeah,
did really well. The box office at the time, I think it was like the 4th highest August opening ever. Mm. And it opened in August and did that well. So people were like really impressed.
Yep.
Blah, blah, blah. There's sequels. I feel like this movie, it gets dinged a little bit because of, I don't love James Franco in it. And I think that, you know, up until you get to like really like the kind of like more adult Caesar, that's when things like really start to pick up and it becomes fully Caesar's story. But I also like that about the film a little bit because I feel like it's something that kind of like, it's a really good movie that like its greatness like creeps up on you. Like,
yeah,
I remember like when I was trying to like, you know, introduce other people to the film or get them to check it out. Cause I think like originally people, when it first came out, people were maybe like, oh, whatever. Planet of the Apes, James Franco, like that's
yeah,
stupid.
I saw that Wahlberg one. No,
yeah,
thank you.
I was like, I don't know, but I was always like, no, it's really good, and like you just gotta like once everyone experiences that moment where it rises up to him, it gets to him saying no. Like if you make it to that point, you are sold. I feel like,
yes,
and that's what I'm saying. Like the movie and the emotions of it kind of like creep up on you a little bit, and then that moment happens, and you're just like, oh fuck! Like that was so well staged and powerful. I am totally on board. Team Caesar, let's go kill everybody. I don't even care. Tom Felton sucks. Not in real life. I don't know him personally. He's probably great. But I just think like it does a masterful job of like setting things up for people now to come in these next movies and like really build on it and like deepen the drama and emotion in big ways. And I just love that it kind of like had the forethought to kind of set up all this possibilities for sequels, even if it was unclear if you would see one at the moment.
It does the legwork to really set up a good beginning and a strong foundation.
And it's not it doesn't have a weird Marvel ending like, some guy, it's not like Caesar is like,
It's not like an eyeball opened up on Caesar's forehead. And he's like,
let me meet all my new ape friends. And the one guy's like, I'm Dr. Zayas.
Or he's like, it truly is a planet of the apes.
I know it's weird that my name is Dr. Zayas because I just learned what a doctor is, but I'm Dr. Zayas.
I went to Hollywood Upstairs Medical School.
There's nothing like that. It all feels very organic and kind of the style of like, they were being smart about it, and I like that a lot.
Yeah. I don't know. I was going to go higher, but now you make me worried about what's to come.
You do.
I'll give it 8 canisters also of gaseous, the ooze. I don't know.
Limitless gas.
Yeah. I thought it was great, and I was just like so excited having seen all of the past movies. Like, it just made me so much happier watching this movie than the first time I watched it. I was like, okay, that was fine. Mm-hmm. This time I was just like, oh my God, the apes, they're taking over.
I believe Elis said, this movie rips. Yeah. when she was talking earlier.
I did, yeah, yesterday. But yeah, it's just really good. I was just like super amped watching it. And I don't know. I did see the other two, but I just don't really remember anything about them. No, so man. I may.
I'm so excited.
If it's like just like I'm worried it's gonna be like too just battle-y, and I maybe won't like it as much. But we'll see. Good Anyways, I give it 8 man. For now.
Ape.
You give it 8.
I think. So I agree with you, and I know that I like the other movies in this series more, but I do think I'm going to go 9 canisters of the limitless gas. Fair. Because I do think that buildup, as you were talking about it, Justin, I think that it works emotionally. I think it's setting the groundwork for these characters, and it also is, you know, we're 10 years past some of the Lord of the Rings stuff and mocap, and it really is this watershed moment of being able to rely on effects to tell a story, and this movie pulls off the magic trick of having less and less humans involved, less and less humans involved. And by the time Caesar says no, you know, it's really him taking, it's a paradigm shift in terms of how you can use these tools and taking the center stage of these films. And it just becomes this, I don't know, sleeper agent of a movie that you realize that what you thought you've been watching, you haven't been watching, and it requires so much reliance and craft on the technical side of things that it's truly remarkable. And I'm really excited to dive into the movies because it's such a great jumping off point for what is to come.
Yeah, it feels really like a, you know, early on, you're like, oh, this is like generic origin story. We know what's going to happen, but that's why, like, it sneaks up on you a little bit, and suddenly you're like, oh, fuck.
I think it's interesting, and I guess we'll have to see as the next 3 movies happen, but, you know, everyone makes fun all the time about how on the film cast they argue about Avatar being culturally relevant. It's like, this is so successful, and all the movies are so good, but I don't know, like, where the cultural cachet is. Maybe it's just because, like, kids don't want to dress up as apes, like, the way they want to dress up as, you know, Captain America or whatever, but it's like Marvel and Star Wars and maybe even DC are like sucking all the air out of the room, and even Lord of the Rings or whatever, and you have like Avatar and Apes and these other ones that are like consistently good that no one's really talking about
as much. I think that both of them have a similar thing where it's not the people, right? Like, there's not the movie stars, there's not it is there, but there's a disconnect from that. Yeah. Like, it's not attached to that celebrity apparatus where, like, Andy Serkis should have probably got an Oscar for this movie.
Yeah, it's interesting, like, sequel science that we'll continue to look at, because I'm pretty sure these writers worked on The Way of Water and Jurassic World.
Yes.
So they know what's up.
It is fascinating. Like, the, you know, we've seen the trailer for the new movie a million times, and I couldn't even tell you who the fuck, I don't even know who's in that movie at
all. There's like one girl.
I don't even know who the fuck is doing any of the other characters, like the apes. I have no idea.
Yeah. I mean, one of them kind of sounds like Idris Elba, but I don't actually know if that's true.
Yeah.
So, Knuckles himself?
Knuckles.
Yeah. I was going to say, like, I don't know if we, I know we talked a lot about the plot and joking around, but like I don't know if we praised enough Andy Serkis's performance.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, and everybody, of course, our guest, Richard Ridings, and then Terry Notary. We barely talked about it,
but they're all amazing. And, like, you know, none of this would have happened without Andy Serkis as well. You know, he brought in, well, you're here.
You'll hear it in the interview. And I think that's probably why Justin and I didn't bring it up as much in this conversation, because we talk to him about it extensively, which you'll hear in a minute.
Yeah. So. Great acting all around, unless you're doing voiceover as James. All right, Well, I think that's going to bring us towards the end of the episode.
Yeah.
Like we mentioned, this movie did really well. And let's see, when does the next one come out?
It's a little bit, I believe.
No, it's, oh yeah, yeah, yeah. No, it came out in 2014.
Yep.
So, sorry, I was seeing 2012, director. But they announced, yeah, Matt Reeves directs the next two films. And if you've surely heard of him from Cloverfield and the Batman and all sorts of stuff. So, very excited about the next movies. It's going to be great. We'll be talking about those next week, but before we leave, Eliz, where can people reach out?
Don't forget to email us, sequelrights@gmail.com. Well, we're halfway through, more than halfway through. So yes,
way more than
let us know where to go next. And then Twitter, Instagram, Facebook @sequelrights and YouTube. We're going to put the video version of the interview up. So make sure you go to youtube.com/@sequelrights.
And rate and review wherever you're listening. 5 stars helps computers find us. We enjoy computers. And share out some of those previous episodes. Are we discussing what we're going to be talking about next? I imagine that we're at least going to cover some Chucky here.
Oh, yeah.
It's relatively soon.
Bad Boys.
There's some time to go back. Bad Boys is on the horizon. Mm-hmm. So lots out there.
And then we're on the
there.
Hunt for our next full franchise.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. We got some check-ins. They also released a trailer for Transformers 1.
They sure did.
All sorts of stuff going on in the sequel rights world. But before we leave you with our amazing interview with Richard Ridings, as we like to do now, this new thing that we have, we you know, there'll still be some copyright music in this, but we're trying to move away a little bit from copyrighted music. And so we thought it'd be fun to make these goofy AI songs. And my co-host, I do it because, I don't know, I like goofing around with that stuff. It's goofy. But my co-hosts haven't heard the songs.
No.
And normally we're just kind of like adding them in at the end. But since we have Richard here, I wanted to do a better transition without using the song. So we're going to play the song live right now so you can hear everyone's reactions. And then we'll go into Richard Ridings. We'll come back briefly and then go to Richard Ridings' interview here. But here is this week's song. It's called Caesar Said No. It's got a little bit of a Power Rangers vibe.
Okay. All right.
It's an anthemic rap track.
Okay.
This week. We're back to the rap. All right, here we go. Caesar Said No.
New world where humans play God's role. A revolution group beyond control. Caesar holding science, raising chains. But he would not submit to mankind's reigns. Caesar said no. James Franco's gotta go. It's gonna rise up, rise up. Destiny rewritten from ancient graves. Caesar said no. James Franco's gotta go. Apes gonna rise up, rise up. Apes gonna rise up, rise up. So remember the tale, Caesar's might, a saga of freedom in the planet's fight.
Draco Malfoy, you shouldn't have been fucking with those apes, bro. Leave them alone and go home. You probably got some spells to learn or some shit. Leave Caesar alone.
All right.
You wrote that. That was not AI. You wrote
okay, those lyrics. I wrote, so in that, I wrote that little outro about Draco Malfoy, and I wrote the lyrics for the...
James Franco's gotta go.
The lyrics for the chorus, okay. And the rest is all ChatGPT.
Okay, okay.
But they put in that crazy, like, that Power Rangers, like, da da
yeah, 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 okay.
Go, go, Power Rangers. It's, like, crazy, but they put that
it's rest funny of it's that it ended AI. Up being on Rise Up, because I was going to say, if you had more time, we would have made you do a whole Hamilton parody. Yeah. Here we go, Rise of the Planet of the Apes.
It's hard to get it to, like, mimic an exact song, though. Sure. That's the problem.
All right.
All right. Well, the weird Albot yet.
Oh, God.
Well, we hope you guys enjoyed that. It's fun. We'll see you guys next week for Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. But please stay tuned right now for our interview with Richard Ridings. All right, everybody. We're here with Richard Ridings, prolific actor. He's been in a million, hundreds of different things. Most notably, he plays Daddy Pig on the Peppa Pig. And also, for our purposes, he starred as Buck the Gorilla in Rise of Planet of the Apes. Oh, there we go. He still got it. Richard, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me. It's great. Great pleasure to talk about very, very happy memories.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. So this week we've been talking about Rise of the Planet Apes, and we wanted to talk to you. How did you end up getting involved in that project?
Well, I'd already done a couple of performance capture games with Andy.
Okay.
Which I think off the back of him doing Lord of the Rings and indeed Kong. He got contacted by a small games company in England who had got a commission from Sony to do this game called Heavenly Sword, which was going to, I think the plan at the time was it was going to launch the PlayStation 3. I think I'm not a gamer myself. So,
that sounds about right.
Although I do voice a lot of games, but I have an addictive personality, so I thought, I better not go there. I mean, I love story, and I love all of that, but, my life will disappear into cyberland totally. if I do this. Games that I learned the acronym IRL, which, we all use now, I think, but 20 years ago, I'd be doing, like, all these voiceovers for games, and the developers would keep saying, "Yeah, IRL will do." And I said, "Hold on, what is this IRL thing?" And said, "Oh, in real life, where we spend about a quarter of our time, So I'd already done Heavenly Sword. We all went out to New Zealand and did that out there. And then there was another game called what was it called? Enslaved, I think it was called, that we did in Santa Monica. And then I got the phone call from Andy saying, "Do you want to come to Vancouver and be a silverback gorilla in plant?" And I was like, "Let me think about this for a nanosecond." Yeah, of course. And it was quite complicated, actually. Yeah. I didn't realize that I kept getting blocked because apparently I was still on board for Game of Thrones because I'd done the pilot for Game of Thrones. And, I couldn't understand why Andy got in touch and said, "Look, they're not, for some reason, then it's not going through this." And basically, I mean, I think I was one of the first people to die in the pilot of Game of Thrones. They had to refilm it.
Yeah.
Because the snow looked so rubbish. Mm. And I think I might have, I said, "Well, forget that. I'm coming out to Vancouver for 10 weeks or 11 weeks. I'm coming to be, I mean, what a great honor to be asked by the guy who's just played King Kong to come and be a silverback."
Yeah.
And plus, which I have a thing for mountain gorillas anyway, as you can probably see from my my email address.
That's right.
And I played the head of gorillas in a film, the John Cleese follow-up to Fish Called Wonder. Huge primates, yes.
Nice.
So I've always had a kind of a deep, deep, deep affection, especially for mountain gorillas. And, of course, Andy went out, as it subsequently learned, he'd actually been out to Rwanda and lived with them for a week in preparation for doing Kong.
Oh, wow.
So he was my major source.
Okay.
Dear old Karen, Cannibal, who plays Morris, she was down. She had to keep going across the border to Seattle Zoo to go and spend a bit of time with her orangutan down there. And but Andy was my major source. He was like, oh, no, let's go and have a chat about Rwanda and, you know, having a snooze after a big feed and farting and all that kind of stuff. And yeah, but sorry, I'm chuntering on here.
It's okay.
No. What for me was quite amazing was watching the advance in the technology. Because the very first game we did, I don't know, Heavenly Sword, was it 2007, 2005? You know, you'd go into the volume, which is what they call this area where you probably know this, mm-hmm. where they do the performance capture. And you'd have sort of dots on various joints and things. But then in your face, you'd have dots and they'd try and capture your expressions. Mm-hmm. And in the first time we did it, it was like these little silver balls that had to be glued on. So you had a makeup artist that was like, okay. And because there's no lighting reset, it'd be like we'd be doing these quite energetic things, and then you just go straight again. Mm-hmm. And by the time I was doing this, I was like, you know, mid-40s, and started to say, "God, you know what? I was, you know, you realize in the rhythm of filming, you can't." Kind of quite look forward to the camera resetting and a bit of relighting, you know, a bit of a sit down, have a couple of sips on your tea, and then you're ready to go again. Not with performance capture. No. Straight back in there. Do it again and again and again and again. And like, ooh. No problem for Andy because he's super fit. I mean, this is a man who, what did he say? You know, his idea of a holiday is going to climb the Matterhorn solo. He's unbelievable. I love him to bits. But going back to watching the advances in technology, in those days it was like, yes, gluing these little things on your faces. The next time round, we could actually see. We couldn't do it when we were filming the scenes, but you could have tryout sessions with your character. And I was playing a character called Pigsy, who was like as wide as he was tall. And that was great, just getting this kind of swaggering kind of movement and seeing what that looked like. By the time he came on to do Apes, the computers have got that much faster as well. And you could actually do really watch them and look at how the movement was translating, you know, onto these what at the time were quite basic puppets. Obviously, no rendering had been done on the textures or whatever. So all the training we were doing with the with lovely Terry Notary and all the chaps and chapesses who had worked as Cirque du Soleil doing the primate stuff for so many years, and they were all on the film. You could start to see, you know, the movement coming together. And making that work. The other thing that got me, and I've been trying to remember his name, but it's the guy who was very instrumental at getting motion capture working. He's a Serbian guy, wonderful guy, and he always did the faces. And this time we had a mask made, a plastic mask made, and they'd drill holes in it so they could just like spray little reflective paint on it. But he said, so we normally do about, I don't know, 128 dots. For Buck, because I really wanted the lips to be very super expressive, and I've got quite a big face as well. He said, I think we did something like 328 dots. Wow. He said, I've never done one so detailed. And we did this four-hour session. We were like, well, we'll just do one there. And then we put the mask on. And so, yeah, makeup in the morning just involved putting this mask on and getting your dots put on. And then, and also we had, for the first time, we had head cams as well. So you're wearing a helmet with a, you know, with a head cam that is actually tracking your face as well. So that's the technology side of things. And I think also it was the first time they had tried to take a volume outside, and it was huge. I mean, my first day on the shoot was the helicopter. leaping at the helicopter and then dying afterwards.
Oh my God. Like, well, you know,
taking David Oyelowo down. Yeah. And it was in a huge car park, and they'd got this. I'd never seen anything like it. It was just an enormous array.
How much did you get to be involved in that whole helicopter sequence? I'm sure the stunt person was doing like the big jumps and everything, but I was curious how much.
I was going to come on to that actually.
Yeah,
because
okay.
Quite involved actually.
That's
because
great.
Although they overlaid the stunt guy, and also there was a wonderful guy, Simon. I can't remember his surname. He was a lovely, lovely fella who was doing a lot of the jumping and the running around. He was a Canadian Olympic gymnast.
Wow.
And I remember because he used to live on a farm just outside Vancouver, and he had to go through American customs to come back into Canada. And he was very involved with the ecological movements and looking after the whales. And he's like such a beautiful soul. And he did a lot of the leaping around and, scrabbling up things very quickly. And whereas I was more like up and down in the cage with the arms over,
that's great.
Pissed off buck, But the leaping at the helicopter. No, we had, it was great because after the principal filming finished, we then went back to the kind of the Weta gymnasium and we did all these, just capturing various movements. But one of them was leaping at the helicopter. Mm. So, we spent an afternoon with me leaping as well. And
that's so cool.
And I'm sure then he did a load as well. And I'm sure they married the two.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because that's quite a leap. First hero of the revolution.
I love, Buck plays such a pivotal, he doesn't survive the film, but he plays such a pivotal role in Caesar's ability to kind of rise up and start to lead these apes at the animal control shelter. And I do love I think he gets some of the apart from Caesar, obviously gets some of the better facial performances. The face that you're making in the moment when Caesar first speaks is really great. I think Buck's reaction is really moving.
Absolutely. Yeah. And there was a kind of bigger sequence that got cut, but it did, I think, if I remember rightly, when just after he's challenged Rocket, mm-hmm. and then Buck comes on board, and it's like, it's kind of going, oh, we've got a new leader now. And, and we did this whole thing where he was almost like inspecting the troops. He was like going up and down. Wasn't needed, really. Mm. I think the point had been made. It was great storytelling. Is it Rick? Rick Jaffer, isn't it? And Amanda Silver wrote the script.
Mm-hmm.
Great, great, great reboot. I mean,
Go ahead.
Sorry, no.
I was going to ask, what was your process like before you filmed every time, to kind of get that energy up to become Buck? What was your morning process?
Well, it kind of... I don't know. I mean, when I was out in Vancouver, I just spent most of the time being gorilla-like. To start with, I was allowed to take these specially made crutches. I think it was Terrier.
Yes.
Developed for Cirque du Soleil. They were kind of medical crutches that you could then put on your arms to extend your arms,
mm-hmm.
and with three little buttons on the end, to aid movement so getting the hang of the walk was great, and the gallop as well, because you can really move with those things at some considerable speed once you master it. Also, the surprising thing was I found it great for my back, because I got thrown off a horse doing a Luc Besson film years ago, and it's still kind of gives me a bit of trouble now and again.
Yeah.
But being on all fours was wonderful. It was great. I loved it. It's a bit difficult to do the... you'd have the crutches on, and then you'd have to beat your chest, and that was quite
tricky.
I'm I'm hitting myself in the head with these crutches. Did that answer the question? Was it? Yeah, I mean, I just did a lot of walking around like that. And then I suppose, and then also, as soon as you put those performance capture suits on, you're kind of like, whoa, in it. Yeah. I think we all found the head cams a bit of a challenge because they're quite heavy. Nice.
Throughout the process, did you find or feel that you had to exaggerate your facial expressions like more for it to be picked up by the motion capture, or is it so advanced at that point that you're just really reacting as you would normally?
Yeah, I think, no, you're right. We did do kind of tests on that. And I was just like, because a lot of expression comes through, especially the top lip. And in fact, I had some teeth made for Buck. And at the end of the day, I decided not to wear them because they were really starting to impede with the ability to kind of just, you know, do quite sensitive things around this area.
Okay.
I'd identified that as being a critical area, which is why I think we did so many dots when we did the facial right. Map. I think by the time we got to principal filming, I was kind of confident that it was going to read. I think so. In fact, like I said, the very first thing I filmed was me dying. And I look at it, I think actually I was still bedding in then, and it was a bit, you know. And he almost speaks, doesn't he?
Yeah.
I remember we did this ADR session where it was like, we kind of want to get you saying thank you, but, and they said, then we'll shift it down an octave. And I said, well, okay. And then I did it, and they were like, well, actually, that's low enough anyway.
Wow.
Looking at the face, I'm kind of like, could have done maybe with another week of just prepping that a bit.
Right.
But, you know.
That's a tough thing to have to film first, your death scene.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't know how much experience you had going into this film with the prior Planet of the Apes films, because we've been watching all of them back from 1968. And wow. The gorillas are the brutes. They're always betraying the chimp leaders. They're the muscle, and they're just there to like kill people and start wars usually. And they're portrayed as kind of, not as intelligent, but that's not the case with Buck, I feel like, in this movie. No. So, had you seen any of those prior movies, and what was your kind of going into this? What did you think about it?
Well, Elizabeth, I'm not as on top of all of that as I probably should be.
No, that's fine. Okay, it's totally a different character.
In fact, it was suggested we didn't watch them again. Although I remember from, you know, when I was a child watching a lot of the, certainly the TV series. I mean, obviously I've watched the, you know, parts 2 and 3 as well of this reboot.
Right.
And the various, you know, betrayals and things that are going on. But no, I think the psychology just becomes a lot more complex, doesn't it? It's all a bit broad brush strokes, that all the other baddies, you know, and we now know so much more about gorillas, especially mountain gorillas, who are very, very peaceable, really. Until, you know, threatened, you know, and that's normally just to try and protect their family, the silverbacks. So, we'll keep those young adolescents in their place.
Yeah, it's kind of like, yeah,
obviously watched a lot of footage of silverbacks at work, you know. Mm-hmm. But
I was just gonna say, yeah, it's kind of beautiful that like the first like lengthy sequence we get with Buck is when he finally gets to come out of the cage.
Oh yeah.
And instead of being angry, he just is like, you know, you're just running around playful, just, like woohoo.
Yeah. I mean, you know, hands up, most of that was Simon. I mean, I did a version of it, but it was like,
yeah,
hey guys, you know, I'm
you didn't climb up the tree.
I'm a 50-year-old smoker, and I don't think I'm going fast enough for long enough here.
Oh my goodness. So when you watch the movie back, or when you did finally see it and you see Buck on screen, or even the other apes, do you see yourself? You're like, wow, that's me, like, on the screen. And like, that's Andy. That's, you know, whomever else. Or is it like, well,
yeah, at times, you know, it's been like Terry as well. Terry.
Yeah.
And you know, and yeah. And yes, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, at times. But then at times you get lost in the story and it's great. You know, the way it should be. It's lovely, you know. But yeah, that death sequence of Buck, you can kind of definitely see my face in there. All right, thank you. Thanks for freeing me. Yeah. Oh, we've had such... It's been short, but it's been great.
Yeah. There's another pretty, in the bridge sequence, there's another pretty emotional thing when Buck is about to just smash one of the highway patrol guys and Caesar like stops him. That was, is there anything about that scene that you remember?
No, not too much. We filmed that quite quickly, actually. Yeah, is he pull him off the horse? I can't remember.
I think,
Or certainly we did a version where he pulled him off the horse.
Right.
I'd need to go back. I mean, it's a few years since I've watched it, if I'm honest. Mm. I know my family got very upset with it. Was it the second one? It was all the torture. Was it maybe the third one? There was the second one, I think, where they were holed up in the camp. Mm. Do you know what I was trying to do? I was trying to get in touch with Karen. I'm friends with Karen on Facebook, and we haven't spoken in years, but I thought it'd be, I mean, I'm sure you'd like that if I, but she hasn't, I don't know what she, maybe she might be off filming somewhere. She's doing a lot of filming.
Oh yeah.
You know, Karen who plays Morris.
Yeah. Maurice. That would be great.
Cause we were kind of big buddies on that film. Cause we were both like, you know, we're surrounded by Cirque du Soleil athletes, these little pots of tuna, and we're going, okay, do you think we're allowed to sort of nip out the back and have a fag? And I said, well, actually, I've given up, and I'd come out and stand with her and smell the smoke. And it's great, really good. That's nice. Am I giving you enough info here?
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, if there's, you know, lastly, if there's any other like favorite moments that you remember from shooting that you wanted to share, otherwise, you know, yeah, I think, you know, it's been great.
I just love the stomping up and down in the cage, you know, and then when Andrew Leslie came in, so we're coming inside the cage, and I was like, oh, okay, then, all right. coming into my world. just the prep, and I think we had so much. It was such a great team spirit, and you know, working within the Weta gymnasium, and then bringing that onto the set as well, and Rupert as well, was so lovely. But it's just such a technical thing as well, because you'd film it and then they have to do reference points with various other silver balls and grey balls and locked off cameras. And it's very technical. Yeah. The only other thing I've done in my career that is that technical was Roger Rabbit years ago when, you know, we were working with teams of puppeteers beneath us and above us. And, you know, we had to rehearse at different speeds because they were going to overcrank the camera and also overlight it as well. It's very technical stuff, and then just trying to hang on to, right, okay, but at the end of the day, you know you're a character and you're doing what the character does in the story, so, but being aware of the technical stuff as well, and not, you know, the old cliche, hit your mark and say your lines. It's that times 10 with all this digital stuff going on. It's, you know, don't forget there's various cameras doing various things around. Okay. I'll try and get it right and just make it seem as natural as possible.
That's great. Yeah. Well, Richard, I just want to say thank you for coming here to talk to us today. It's been amazing talking to you.
My pleasure.
And congratulations on 20 years of Peppa Pig.
Yeah, no, it's still still popular. Apparently, it's gone big in China now.
Oh wow!
I think one of my wife's cousins married to a Chinese lady, and her sisters in China say, yes, we use it definitely to learn English.
Oh wow! Yeah, it's got to be incredible to be part of such a, like, you know, institution of children's television.
It is. It's lovely, and also because it's so loved as well. And as I was saying, Justin, you know, I don't know how old your daughter is, but if you do go down that route and she finds it magical, just get back in touch, and I'll gladly
that would be so nice.
A personalized message. It's actually the hidden joy of doing the show.
Oh, man.
It's all these little messages I get to do for people.
That's so
cool. You know that it's so magical in their world at that age, and it's funny actually. Somebody was asking me to do we were having a Zoom chat the other day, and she said, "Well, can I record?" And I said, "Well, you kind of can, but I don't like my face being used." Mm. For, you know, when you're talking about Daddy Pig, because right. I want the children to see Daddy Pig,
right?
You know, not a 63 or whatever it is, your old balding.
That's bug. Not Daddy Pig, yeah.
Pig. He looks more like a granddad, that guy.
Oh man. Well, is there anything that you have coming out? You know. Coming up here that people can check out your work, or is there any special?
I'm not sure. I mean, I know they re-showed a thing I was in where I play Mr. Bumble in a Dickensian series, but I'm not sure if that was on in America. Mm-hmm. Called Dickensian, which was a sort of a retake, a reimagining of a lot of Dickens stuff. That was a lot of fun.
Nice.
And there's a series called Fat Friends I did 20 years ago. I know that's big on British Netflix. I don't know whether it's international, though.
Okay.
Because I know different regions show different things, don't they? As I'm discovering doing the research for all the sync licensing, crikey, it's like, that show's only available in Canada. And I'm like, what have I got to subscribe to watch this? It's exploded. The whole world of TV and streaming has exploded, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It's a full-time job.
Yeah, pretty much. Oh, man. Well, thank you so much for being here. We really appreciate it. And,
my pleasure.
You know, everyone can check out, you know, Richard's work in Rise of the Planet of the Apes and Peppa Pig and hundreds of other things.
Pleasure to meet you. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Richard.
And you, Elizabeth.
Yeah.
Good luck with the show.